Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Author Chats. I'm Elizabeth Kelly. Today, we are honored to have with us Professor Andrew Guthrie Ferguson of the University of the District of Columbia's School of Law. Professor Ferguson is the author of an important new book titled The Rise of Big Data Policing, Surveillance, Race, and the Future of Law Enforcement. Hello, Professor.
Hello. Thanks very much for having me.
Well, thank you for returning. Regular listeners of this show may remember that a few years ago, you were our guest to discuss what was then your new book titled Why Jury Matters, another very, very important book. You use several types of terms in your book concerning data, and I'd like to ask you about each one of them. And I think your responses will give our listeners a very good sense of the direction of your book and the issues that you find important, not only now, but in the future. First of all, what is big data?
So big data is the information that we are all giving up through our digital trails, and big data in sort of the consumer space reflects the increase in the volume and velocity and variety of all this information. You know, people leaving their smart homes and going to their smart cars with their smartphones and smart watches and Googling everything they need to know and buying everything they want from Amazon. Each one of those things is a data trail that can be collected by companies, can be collected by entities. And we're seeing a parallel reality in policing. And so I coined the term big data policing to talk about this similar change in the volume, velocity, and variety of policing data. I mean, right now in America, there's software that's predicting future crimes. There are cameras recording your public movements. There are algorithms generating virtual most wanted lists. And there are data banks that are collecting personal information, DNA, iris scans, facial recognition. It's all changing how police police, who they target, where they're going, and how they investigate crimes.
Well, as I understand from the book, data is being collected not only about so-called criminals, but also about the ordinary law-abiding citizen.
So, you know, certainly data is being collected by consumer entities, and, you know, we all give it up quite willingly to Google and Amazon, who know more about us than our loved ones do. But police are also collecting information about us, people who are either suspected of crimes or even associates of those people who are suspected of crimes. And so in some jurisdictions like Los Angeles right now, they're trying to sort of map the social networks of criminal gangs and criminal activities. But in order to do that, they also need to map the associates of those associates, the girlfriends, the moms, the grandmas, and people who will get caught up in this web of data, who are in the wrong cars at the wrong time, who live at the same addresses, who call these people. And so these networks of information collect both the people who are the targets, the primary targets who police really want to go after, but also people who have no criminal involvement except for the fact that they may be connected through friendship or family to some of these primary targets.
And this is all predicated on the data being correct. Isn't that so?
So that's true, right? So one of the real problems is in some of the jurisdictions that are using predictive algorithms to identify either places that will be thought to be involved, you know, a place where the next crime might occur, or there might be more of a risk for a crime to occur there, or people who might be involved either as victims of crime or perpetrators of crime. The data points going in to sort of generate this predictive score or this predictive risk level are obviously, you know, the same inputs that come from the human world, right? And so there can be errors in terms of just simple errors, like people make mistakes. There can be errors of judgments. There can be inferences that are drawn that are not accurate. And they, you know, if you think that in some jurisdictions, which I certainly do, there are problems of implicit and explicit bias in our policing, where certain communities are policed more and differently, if that data is coming into the system to create eventual outputs, you have to be aware of the fact that some of those implicit and explicit biases may get sort of laundered through the data and could result in equally unfair outputs.
Well, as you point out so eloquently throughout the book, even this so-called objective data subjectively targets certain communities, which leads to my next question. You use the term black data throughout the book, and the term black does not only refer to skin color, correct?
Right. So I use this sort of metaphor of black data to talk that, in my opinion, and actually the reason I wrote this book was that I think all big data policing has a black data problem. And black data meaning, one, it's not transparent. This is a black box problem. It's an algorithm that you can't see behind. It's machine learning that by design you could never see behind. And it's creating real world effects based on this lack of transparency. It's also black because it's racially coded. The data directly impacts communities of color. It's encoded with our history of racial tension and racial bias in policing. And we can't forget that that's part of it. And it's also black because it's distorting. We have a law, a constitutional law, that was pretty much based on a small data reality, right? This was information that the officer knew or saw, and nothing more than that. And now that we have big data systems that create more inputs and more information, it distorts this old-fashioned law that we had in ways where we really haven't fully wrestled with what comes next. And so the book is a warning call to sort of say, let's think about these changes, recognize that these concerns of transparency, racial bias, and constitutional law and constitutional rights are being distorted, and let's try to get ahead of the problem before we have to deal with how it might create real problems in society.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Author Chats. I'm Elizabeth Kelly. We're talking with Professor Andrew Guthrie Ferguson, the author of an important and compelling new book titled The Rise of Big Data Policing, Surveillance, Race, and the Future of Law Enforcement, published by NYU Press. And I strongly suggest that you follow Professor Ferguson on Twitter like I do, and tell our listeners what your Twitter handle is.
It's Prof. Ferguson. So if you just type in Andrew Ferguson or Prof. Ferguson, you'll see me and a whole lot of interesting sort of news, because something happens almost every day in this world of big data policing. It's really changing. You know, law enforcement is experimenting in different cities with new technologies. There are interesting studies about whether it works or it doesn't work. And it is really changing what police are doing on a daily basis. And I try to keep that updated on my Twitter account.
And that you certainly do. Now, speaking of colors and law enforcement, another term that you use in the book is blue data. What is blue data and why is it important?
So I coined the idea of blue data to show that we are also collecting information about police. One of the realities of this change of policing, one of the realities of building an architecture of surveillance to surveil people on the street, is we've accidentally also created a terrific architecture to surveil how police do their jobs. The same technologies of predictive analytics to identify potential criminals can identify officers who might be more at risk to be involved in violence or to do things inappropriately. The same kind of data mining technologies that we have used to solve crimes can be used to see patterns and practices in policing that could be altered or changed. And a lot of the surveillance technologies, body cams and other sort of surveillance cameras that we use to watch the streets, are also obviously capturing the police as they do their jobs. And if we wanted to turn the lens of that surveillance camera on police in an effort to improve accountability, improve training, improve the ability to sort of heal some of the tensions that have been built in certain communities, we could do so. And so I sort of talk about how the technologies in some ways are agnostic. It's how you use them. And we could, if we had the political will and the interest to do so, to improve some of the problems that we know exist in policing, but we haven't either seen, we haven't studied, and we haven't sort of figured out how to use the data to improve policing, which is something we all, of course, want to do.
And as you emphasize in your chapter on blue data, law enforcement, like any profession, only has a very, very small minority of officers who are involved in unlawful use of force and other incidents that we read about in the media.
And that's true. But what's even more fascinating about big data is you can find patterns that you wouldn't expect. So there were some data scientists out of Chicago who went to Charlotte-Mecklenburg and the police department there. And they did an experiment to see if they could figure out if there were sort of triggers for this kind of violent action. And one of the things they discovered was that officers who responded to like a traumatic scene, picture a suicide or like a child death, tend to have an elevated risk of violence in the next shift. And why? Because police are human beings, and they just saw terrible trauma, and they're still processing it. So when then they're put into a frightening, scary situation the next time around, they react less well than they would if they didn't have that. And that leads to some obvious changes, right? Don't send that person who just saw the child suicide to the next incident, right? Find someone else to respond to that scene. And by identifying that through data, they didn't know that before they started crunching the numbers to figure out what was going on, but by identifying that, they were able to create a recognition that they weren't doing a great job to deal with the trauma that police officers see literally every day, and that there were easy ways to avoid putting that same officer in a situation where they might setting that person up for trouble in the future. And that came from the data. It came from this idea of studying policing using data.
A final term which I'd like you to define for our listeners is bright data. What is bright data?
So bright data is a concept that maybe we could separate out the risk identification value of these predictive analytics from the policing remedy. Right now, predictive policing is about predicting the places where crime might occur and the people who might be involved in crime, and then sending either a police car to that location or sending a police officer to that door of that young person to say, look, you're on the wrong path. And the risk identification that a particular area might be involved in crime or a particular person might be involved in crime doesn't necessarily require a policing remedy. You could fix up that block where you think the crime is going to occur. You could send social services to that individual who you think might be going down the wrong path. You don't have to have a police officer there. But the way we have funded predictive policing, the way we've sort of provided the information and the technology, has been through the police. So the remedy has been through the police. So the idea of bright data is maybe we should separate out the risk identification using these new technologies that might actually be able to show where an area might have more risk and might be able to show who might be more at risk for getting involved in criminal activity, but it doesn't have to be a criminal, it doesn't have to be a policing remedy. We could separate at risk and remedy and thus take the good of the technology without some of the negatives that come with when you're asking police to do a difficult job of trying to deal with environmental risk factors and or individuals who might be going down the wrong path.
I'm going to ask you a difficult question. What if a police officer is listening to this interview and says, this is all well and good, but I'm a police officer. I'm not a social worker. I did not sign up for this. Moreover, my supervisor cares about arrests. That's how I am assessed on my job. What is your response?
Well, you know, what's interesting is a lot of the administrators who get the idea of big data policing realize that the forcing the officer to count arrests as a success is kind of a mistake. In fact, the real goal of police-based predictive policing is to lower arrests and lower crime on the theory that if you put the police officer in the right place at the right time, you will deter that future crime that you've predicted, and you don't have to make an arrest because there isn't going to be a crime. And so the administrators who understand this recognize that big data might help us reshape what the incentive structure is for law enforcement. I also think that officer, when they read this book and when they think about these issues, will realize that this is the time to actually have the discussion about the pros and cons of it. Right now what happens is the officer essentially gets told, hey, follow this algorithm or go to this place because some computer told you, without really understanding about why that might be the case, what's the value in it, and how it's changing what they do on a daily basis. And the reason for writing the book is to engage law enforcement officers, administrators, civil libertarians, communities, to start engaging these questions now because we're still at the early stages of this new technology. It's still just happening and rolling out in different cities at different times. And I want that officer to be involved in the discussion. I want him to say, you know what, I have some insights that would be helpful to shaping the next technology and recognizing that maybe we could change the incentive systems, because just arresting people out of the problems is never going to succeed in reducing crime in the long term.
Well, I certainly agree with one of your last points. That is to say, on the eve of this new technology, all stakeholders, that is to say law enforcement, criminal defense lawyers, civil libertarians, community activists, anyone who cares about our criminal justice system needs to be at the table. Thanks so much for joining us here on Author Chats. We've been talking with Professor Andrew Guthrie Ferguson, the author of The Rise of Big Data Policing, Surveillance, Race, and the Future of Law Enforcement. Please remember, injustice anywhere threatens justice everywhere. Have a good day.